Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Opera is our topic today, and in particular, Anchorage Opera's upcoming performance of An American Dream this February, and I'm going to give you the dates, 15, 16, and 17 of February. This opera is set in the World War II period and weaves two terrible trials of that war, concentration camps for Jews in Europe and internment camps for Japanese Americans on the west coast of the United States. As told through the lives of a young Japanese girl, as it intersects with a German and Jewish war bride married to a GI. I came to this topic uninitiated in opera. I have heard famous arias and had some sense of the drama and storytelling nature of opera, but I had questions about how this art form stays relevant in modern life. As it turns out, An American Dream tells a very American story, elements of which actually played out in Alaska during World War II. So we are very lucky to have the opera's creator with us here today, composer, and actually the conductor here in Anchorage of this opera, Jack Perla. Welcome, Jack.
Happy to be here.
Very happy to have you. And your background, your bio is on our website, but the thing that stands out for me is that you're not just composing for opera. Jazz is important to you. All kinds of music forms are important to you. So that may figure in a little bit to okay. what we learn about an American Dream. We also have Reed Smith, the General Director of Anchorage Opera. Welcome, Reed.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And thank you for gently letting me land in the land of opera over at your offices there down in Ship Creek. And we have Judy Berry, who is also the Marketing and Development Director of Anchorage Opera.
Thanks for having us.
Very, very happy to have you. And you are a dynamic duo. I know that, you come to us from Tri-City Opera in New York. And we're just lucky to have you with extensive backgrounds and also backgrounds in singing, both of you, not just arts administration, but singing and performance.
Correct.
So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that, too. So before we get started, I want to let our listeners know that we have some links on Hometown Alaska's webpage, so you would find it at alaskapublic.org. The kind of things we have there, you can actually go to Jack Perla's site and listen to this opera. And mm-hmm. if you're going to go to the opera and you want to get ready, you could actually mm-hmm. listen to it in advance and mm-hmm. get a feel for it. We also have a synopsis of the opera, the bios of our guests, just lots of interesting information that you might enjoy.
You could even look at the score. You'd have to email me for a password.
Okay. if I get a request, Jack, it's coming right to you. So I do like to let our listeners know you're welcome to join in. Maybe you have questions or comments, or maybe you're an opera goer that want to say something to our guest today. So give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, you can call in at 1-888-353-5752. And we also can take email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I'll give those out a couple times during the hour. So as we get going, you might get interested in calling and telling us something about this. So anyway, I did kind of allude to the fact that I do not have a background in opera. I had piano lessons for 3 years as a kid, and I think my piano teacher was glad when I left. So I'm trying to learn to play the fiddle now. You know, I'm going to be 80 before it happens. But so I don't bring a background, but that's okay. That's
absolutely.
I mean, that's how we can learn about it. There's probably people in our audience that know more than me and some that know about as much as I do. So this is a chance for everybody. I think we're going to go in depth on this opera, but also talk a little bit broadly about opera. Let's see. We're going to spend the first two segments on the American Dream. Judy, you're just going to have to beat me up after the show.
Change the title.
And, you know, one of the things I thought when I approached this was, well, I had an editor who said, there are no news stories, we just tell them over. And I wondered, well, could that be true that opera through the years has been telling, human stories, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know. We'll talk about that. Maybe mm-hmm. you disagree with me. But mm-hmm. But really, jumping right in to An American Dream, I want to go to Jack, who composed it. I'm just going to invite Jack to tell us the storyline first off, so people can settle into this idea of this story.
Sure. So it's set in World War II. It's sort of, I guess it starts a little bit after Pearl Harbor. And it concerns two families. So one is a Japanese-American family, the Kobayashis, and they live in a farmhouse, a strawberry farm. in, say, it's not specific, but something like Bainbridge Island in the Pacific Northwest. And they've had this farmhouse for years, and that's their home, and they have this business, of a successful business of a farm that they've built up. The second family is Jim, who is a veteran of World War One.
Oh, okay, World War One.
So he's a little bit older. Older for that time, say in his mid-40s. Mm-hmm. And his bride, Ava, who is a German-Jewish refugee. And he has helped to get Ava out of Germany at that time. And so it's this, I mean, I actually am going to resist giving the whole story. I'm sure it's on the website or there's a synopsis. But basically what happens is it's a sort of a morality play to me about the things that happen in bad times, in wartime, and there's sort of moral shortcuts that people take and are in a way encouraged to take or decide to take. Or, you know, is it okay to take them or not? And so... So the two families come together when Jim is, I think, in his mind, trying to provide a home for himself and Ava, and for Ava's family. And Ava's family has not been able to escape Germany. And so Jim is deeply concerned to provide for her. And he's sort of promised her parents that he would do so. And so that's where the American dream piece comes in, that sort of classic idea of a home, you know, and
a safe place,
yeah,
a place to provide for your family,
stability and sort of profitability in a way, you know.
Yeah.
And so but he takes this shortcut where he sort of forces the sale of the Kobayashi's home. So he's been after Mr. Kobayashi. So the executive order 1966 has been issued, and which happened to all Japanese Americans, they had to leave very quickly. There's almost no notice, a day or two. And then they were going to be arrested and taken to an incarceration camp. And so Jim sees this as an opportunity. And he sees the Japanese as the enemy. He's been in World War One. He has a sort of a wartime mentality that in times of war you make really clear, you know, black and white kind of binary decisions. And so he forces the sale, and this is historically true. This had happened a lot. And that's something I didn't know about. So it was really fascinating and, you know, grim and unsettling.
Mm-hmm. Opportunistic.
To learn all the details. It's one thing to know, I think, that you know, this happened, and Japanese American citizens who were actually, you know, even born in the States were, you know, treated as aliens, essentially, and treated as a threat, arrested, rounded up. But to know all the details, sort of how it went down in these particular situations, that was really something that made it very real.
Mm-hmm.
And our librettist, Jessica Murphy-Moo, just did a terrific job of, you know, studying the historical material and then turning it into a story that's both, I think, true to the time, but, you know, works as theater and is also, in a certain way, telling a larger story that is applicable, unfortunately, to our current period.
Right, you know. Right. And I was reading different reviews of An American Dream because it might have opened in the 2015, maybe?
Yes, 2015.
But back, I think 2011, there was a community engagement effort from the Seattle Opera, and
right.
There were two questions. Do you know them? I have them, if I can find them, that were asked.
If you, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise I'd be
the
paraphrasing.
The Belongings Project.
That was Sue Elliott was...
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She was in charge of community engagement and education programs
for
Seattle Opera. She spearheaded this whole project.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was interesting to learn how something begins you know. So here are the two questions, if I'm correct, and help me out if I'm not. If you had to leave your home today and couldn't return, what would you take with you? And why is that object, that connection to your past, so important? And I believe citizens wrote in, gave answers to her.
Yeah. Well, people were actually interviewed. They set up. I wasn't there for that, but what I saw, because I saw these hundreds of videos, actually, or, you know, some 125 or 150 videos. So there was a lot of interviews.
Participation.
Many, many videos. They set up cameras in the lobby of Seattle Opera, and I think also at a museum. I want to say it was the Museum of Industry. I forget.
That's okay.
But so there were these two places where these interviews took place, and there were many, many of them. And then Seattle Opera culled them all, and Jessica and I watched them. I mean, they sent the links to me, and I watched all of them. And then the writer Jessica Murphy Moo and I. And Sue Elliott, you know, began a dialogue like, okay, what jumps out at you? What are the powerful stories?
I was trying to imagine how you get from this collection to this story. I believe that it can happen, but there's a lot of sweating that goes on, I think.
There was a lot of sweating,
figuring out, you know, and so you...
We had a director who was involved early on. I will not give his name, but he was from Europe. I will not give his country. but he was very decisive and... almost comically so. And at one point, he was so frustrated with the process because there were so many iterations. I think it was just so unclear that he took himself off the project and said, I will not be involved in an opera camp. This is not opera camp.
Wow. That's fascinating. I can imagine that playing out in many, many professions and art forms where, you know, when you're starting from a creative seed that people can't recognize that you're going to get to something from there, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's exactly the thing that writers of whatever stripe, that's what they do. They're comfortable with that mess, you know, and like, okay, this is, you know, it's like, we look at the sausage being made all the time. We make the sausage, so we know it's somehow it comes together.
Yeah. Well, if you've just joined us, I just want to let you know who we're talking about: Anchorage Opera, An American Dream, which is going to be here in Anchorage in the middle of February. And we have on this in the studio with us today Jack Perlow. You were just listening to Jack talk about making sausage, opera, making opera coming from sausage, but I mean that's the true creative process. The you know what tugs at you, what emerges as important, and we also have from the Anchorage Opera Reed Smith, the general director, and Judy Berry, marketing and development director, and performers in their own right with long musical careers. So that's what we're talking about. We welcome your engagement with a phone call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, or we also welcome any email at hometownalaskapublic.org. So, you know, one other question for you, Jack. I was trying to imagine, okay, you know, you and your librettist, that is Jessica Murphy Moo.
Yes.
You know, you get a storyline, you get the words and the story, and then I was imagining that the musician would, or the composer would be saying, what are the big moments here? What are we going to parse out here and take out and spend time on? Is that anything like what your process was like? Like, you're looking at the story, but now you have to write music and make moments.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Opera for me is, I mean, the arias, that.
And
part
for,
of
for
opera
people
is, what,
like me,
is what makes the genre really special. So that's the songs.
The songs.
The things that, you know, you have all the, we were talking about this before, you have all the sort of pass the butter moments in opera, which for me, I try to get through them as quick as possible. You know, the dialogue, you know, what's going from here to here and, you know, why, and, oh, I'll see you in that room and, oh, let's meet tonight and et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And that, you know, what's odd in opera or unusual or special is that's sung. It's all sung almost entirely.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, say, in musical theater, much of that would be spoken.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the big things that anybody would recognize as a song, you know, El Luceven, Le Stelle, or, you know, et cetera, any of the great opera arias. And I like that tradition. To me, that's really important.
It's like showstoppers, I guess, in a way, or but big emotional moments.
Yeah. Like soliloquies.
It gives you a chance to really delve into the emotion of the moment. It oftentimes in arias, it will be repeated, the same thought, but you do that in life, you know, if you're really thinking about something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right? Your gerbil brain goes back and over and over and over and over that thought. But here, it shows the torment maybe that a character is experiencing, or the indecision, or the, you know, fear.
Absolutely.
Almost any emotion, yeah.
Yeah.
Jack, I want to make a point here. Am I right in thinking that the libretto was eventually based on the stories of two Japanese women that were interned?
Yes and no. It was based on, I would say, maybe eight or so videos, but two were the primary, became the primary material. So it was terrific what Jessica did. So initially, I think Seattle Opera would have been fine for this to be essentially a song cycle. And I wasn't. I had only one request for that, this American Dream, when it was the Belongings Project, which is what it was originally titled. And I said, well, let's either make really an opera, meaning a story, a drama, something happens, a beginning, a middle, and an end, characters, etc., or let's make something that is very definitely not an opera. It's some other kind of piece, but it's, you know, not, it doesn't try to be an opera. What I didn't think would be interesting would be to have, different characters that were unrelated, but that is how it started. Yeah. What Jessica did is, we sort of decided, oh, you know, what we'll do is, for example, there was a character when he answered those questions, he talked about, I forget what his belonging was, but it related to flying. Mm. And he just spoke so beautifully about when he first flew, you know, like a crop duster, sort of like a Cessna, and how much it meant to him. And he flew over the fields in the Pacific Northwest. And it was just gorgeous, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, that whole idea, for a while, Jim was a pilot. We later realized there was sort of a historical problem with that. Mm. But it worked its way into the music. So anyway, Jessica took all these threads, and anything that really felt compelling, eventually she decided, okay, well, that sub-story will somehow be part of, you know, Jim's character or Ava's character,
mm-hmm.
or Setsuko's character, etc.
Hmm.
But the two primary were Mary Matsuda Grunewald was a Japanese-American strawberry farmer. And she talked about how, they ran a store, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a store, like a sort of a dry goods store. And she had a jar of shells that she had collected as a girl. And that was what she would have taken.
Mm.
And then there was Marianne Veltmann, who was from Stettin, Germany. And she had a book about her hometown. She just loved her hometown, and this book meant everything to her, to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they became, Marianne Veltmann, who was German, became Ava, and Mary Matsuda became Setsuko.
That, you know, one thing I was thinking about our audience here in Anchorage, we have not had policies that have forced us to leave our homes. We have had natural things happen,
right,
like earthquakes.
Yeah.
And everybody I know has been saying, do you have your to-go bag, you know, that thing that you run out of the house with? And
yeah.
That's what came to mind here. And, you know, you really have to have forethought to get to things like that. I mean, people have been saying, I have $60 in cash. I know the ATMs aren't going to be working, you know, but this is more like what's going to live with you for the rest of your life that is meaningful for you. And that's sort of what this story is. Well, you know, I want to play one short piece from An American Dream, and I'm going to use it as just an introduction to the way we're going to talk about this opera in the second segment. What we're going to be listening to is a little bit of None Can Escape, and
I have a little description here, thanks to Judy, FBI agent entrance. There's a traditional Japanese song, Sakura. I don't know what that means. Tell us a little bit about that, Jack.
That's cherry blossoms, a song about cherry blossoms.
Okay.
And so in that scene, the Kobayashis have to burn any of the belongings that they have that tie them to Japan, because they're so afraid of being seen as the enemy. And so they have some phonograph record, probably like 78s, and they're putting things in the fire.
Oh, wow.
And they've broken one of the records, they're about to put it in the fire, and then they pick it up, and Mr. Kobayashi says, oh, you know, this is my favorite song, and he begins to sing it.
And of course we hear the voice of an FBI agent, that's sort of the official state voice. So anyway, with that,
it's just an interesting note about,
oh yes, go ahead.
Sort of, I might as well tell it, but it's optional. You could also sing it. And this is intentional, but I pitched it quite high. So if you sing it, the FBI agent sounds a bit sort of neurotic and stressed.
Mickey Mouse-ish, or not like a...
He doesn't sound...
Like a big FBI agent.
Yeah, well, and what I also learned when I was reading about this is that often they weren't really FBI agents. They were sort of just drafted in a quick service. Yeah. It was like local guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was... there was a thuggish quality to the whole thing. It was so ill thought out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's very serendipitous, frankly, because I love the fact that it's spoken, that it makes it so powerful, because you're in the middle of everything being sung, and then all of a sudden you have, which is kind of the opposite of when you go to a straight play and everything's spoken.
Right.
If someone started singing,
what song
all of a sudden that would be something that would be very...
Right.
Important.
Right.
So let's go ahead and give a listen to None Can Escape. It's about a minute or so, so we have a little bit of time to listen to it. So go ahead and let's hear that. Did we hear the FBI?
No.
So that was a
not was a bit earlier.
Yeah, it was
about 2 minutes later.
Okay.
I think you
okay.
It, something like that.
So that was Mr. Kobayashi talking or singing.
That was Jim.
That's Jim
saying good evening, Mr. Kobayashi.
Okay.
Where it's Jim launching into this whole sales pitch that he's worked up in his head.
Right.
To convince Mr. Kobayashi.
To take advantage, to get an advantage.
To get the advantage.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it right there and take a tiny break and come back and talk a little bit more about this. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I am Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And just to remind you, what we're talking about in American Dream, we're talking, that is an opera that will be in Anchorage February 15, 16, and 17. And we have Reed Smith and Judy Berry from Anchorage Opera here in the studio with us, and Jack Perla, who is the composer of An American Dream. And we just set you all up for this amazing FBI, but didn't quite get it. But that's okay. You know, I'm not worried about it.
Come to the show and you'll
hear
it.
The reason that it intrigued me was, you know, I had conversations with Judy, emails with Judy back and forth about the way Jack pulls different things into. I'm just gonna find this little bit that I thought was really interesting from Judy about Jack's. Where is it? It has to do with pulling in sounds that would be there. Like, I think there was a reference to
his compositional style.
Yes,
yeah.
Your compositional style, like basketball dribbling in a production.
Oh,
or,
yes.
Yeah, and to me, the
yes.
FBI coming
courtside.
In, it's a human and it's not a sound effect, but it's
yeah.
weaving in
yeah.
what might that have actually sounded like if you were right there, sort of thing. So,
exactly, yeah.
So, and that's what the sort of. And the fact that the FBI person is speaking and not singing, that stands out. But let's talk a little bit about your compositional style, as Judy calls it. I mean, it means like the whole world is at your reach, I guess.
Well, especially in opera, right? Like yeah. opera gives you, if you have an interest in a lot of music, which I do, then it's a great genre to work in because different things can be pressed into service for the drama, you know, mm-hmm. to tell the story. So dissonance, you know, can evoke certain emotions, and plain simplicity can, you know, mm-hmm. evoke other emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really attractive to me.
Yeah.
So even just in terms of harmony, not genre, I love it because there's so much room for so many types of harmony. And on one level, like, all I care, there's one level in which there's one life I lead in which all I care about is harmony. So.
All this other stuff is extra. It's icing
yeah,
on the cake.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, it's kind of yeah. true. Like, it's just the history of harmony, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, whether it's harmony at the hands of Chopin or harmony at the hands of Errol Garner or Herbie Hancock, you know, just sort of like there's been this just extraordinary conversation about it. And it's crossed, you know, it's crisscrossed the entire world, and it's been passed around like a discussion.
It's beyond language. It's beyond.
It is a language.
And that's what I was just going to say is that one of the things about opera that I always like to say to people, because I believe it, is it's like a universal language. You know, people say, well, it's an Italian, I won't understand it. Of course, American Dream doesn't have that problem, but
right.
but there's an immediacy. It speaks to your soul. And so what Jack is saying is he has at his disposal all of these very American traditions.
Mm-hmm.
As an American composer, mm-hmm. it makes it so fascinating mm-hmm. that he pulls in something that tugs at our human state
mm-hmm.
without us even, you know, recognizing
it. Almost
subliminal.
Yeah. So almost I found the quote that you gave me, Judy, that mm-hmm. I do want to share. It's about how you, Jack, compose, known for cross-fertilizing classical music with world music and jazz. Jack Perla has a strongly contemporary musical voice. His opera is written in you're going to have to help me with this, mm-hmm. post-Britain, post-Bernstein. So
good.
I looked up Britain from 1913 to 97, an English composer.
Yeah.
So they're saying you're after him and after Leonard Bernstein. So right. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but let's keep going.
They're really good. I'll take that.
So it's okay to follow them.
Yeah.
So you find appropriate musical material for the drama, whether it concerns Indian immigrants to Texas, reflected in a mix of sitar, harmonium, and tabla with piano, violin, and cello, or ex-lovers at a San Francisco bus stop who dip into French cabaret, tango, blues, and more chromatic music, or teenage basketball players with the sound of dribbling in the
mm-hmm,
percussion.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think, to me, this, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but is this the signal of modern opera? Or would you say, no?
I mean,
they've been doing this forever.
There's also a strong current of post-minimalism, which I think takes a different approach. And it doesn't underline things stylistically so much as it has a general sound and approach to dramatization. That's been a strong thread. I think that's changing up a bit now.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that's so exciting about this particular period that we're in with the development of opera is that there are so many voices. Mm. It's not one. I mean, Jack has a very unique voice, but there are so many directions that it's going. And for us as administrators at Anchorage Opera to bring these pieces that are on the cutting edge and that are, you know, brand new is just so exciting for us to present to our community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, does it ever stop being opera? That's a strange question.
It an opera?
Yeah. Well, how do you know for sure you still have an opera and you haven't created something totally different? No?
Who cares? Question.
Right.
You mean, is that like the music, is it musical theater question? That one I really don't. I mean, I find that academic. I mean, for me, like Sweeney Todd is a great American opera.
Yeah.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Carmen is pretty much a musical. I mean, come on. It's so, you know, uh-huh. I mean, it's just, some of it's just the way you sing and, you know, the insistence in the opera community on singing without microphones and, you know, not mm-hmm. engaging a certain singing style. But as far as the way the music works and moves, you know, Carmen moves so much like a musical. I mean, actually, it's more like a musical than a lot of new musicals, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's closer to Rodgers and Hart and the way. And the other thing is, you know, operetta, right? That's what led to the musical.
Right.
So, and that was, you know, it was just a somewhat sort of lighter.
Operetta is the combination of singing with dialogue. So Gilbert mm-hmm. and Sullivan, we just did one,
HMS Pinafore.
HMS Pinafore, and that's an operetta. So
uh-huh.
you're...
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I'm embarrassed to ask it, but you'll be kind, and you'll talk about me later. But I wanted to ask about Hamilton. Is that, would you consider that opera? Or would you say?
I don't think it really matters particularly.
Uh-huh.
It's obviously incredibly powerful, and that's awesome. And it's, you know, I think it's one of those works that is really powerful in the theater.
Right.
And that's terrific, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, interesting little factoid about La Boheme, which we're doing to close our season, is that it then became a Broadway musical called Rent.
So right. right, I read that.
People might not know La Boheme, but they might know Rent. And is it better? Is it, you know, what? I agree with Jack. It's storytelling with music. And that's what speaks to me.
Yeah, storytelling with music, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's play that other piece, but I'm going to throw out our phone numbers one more time for our listeners, 550-8433 or email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. And just in case you just got back in your car from running errands, we're speaking with two folks from the Anchorage Opera, Judy Berry and Reed Smith, and we have the composer of An American Dream, who will also be conducting it here when it opens in Anchorage in mid-February, which I think is a first. Well, first to Alaska, right, Jack?
First to Alaska, first to see moose.
First to see moose.
Up close and personal.
It's happened.
Yeah, twice.
And
first to conduct one of my operas, fuller. I mean, I've done the short ones, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's one thing to write it and get to sit back and watch. And it's another thing to have to perform that night as well, which
very
is
different.
Yeah. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to listen to A Long Road to Tokyo. And this is about a minute. Japan surrenders, and there's an historical radio announcement, so you're going to hear some history in this one, and a return of one of the characters, Setsuko, to her home. So we're planning on about a minute and 10 seconds, and this, again, is A Long Road to Tokyo from An American Dream.
My fellow Americans, the Japanese have just officially laid down their arms. They have signed terms of unconditional surrender. 4 years ago, the thoughts and fears of the whole civilized world were centered on another piece of American soil, Pearl Harbor. The mighty threat to civilization which began there is now laid at rest. It was a long road to Tokyo and a bloody one. We shall not forget Pearl Harbor.
Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about what we just heard. I heard Setsuko and Eva and Jim. Eva, did you make contact with Setsuko?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But also, was that an actual historical recording? I mean, that's...
Yes. Those were all available through some government site. It was like, not the Smithsonian, but something.
Yeah, yeah. Has a lot of power.
Oh, actually. I just love that you use those. It just pulls us right into the the moment.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, and the scratchiness. Of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, right, and the authority in the voice and mm-hmm.
yeah,
sense
and
of
the
being...
way people spoke at that time yeah. was mm-hmm. so desperate, mm-hmm. especially if you think away of the way certain government people's... officials speak now. It's very different.
There's a world of operas coming.
Right? comedies.
So let's see. Let's talk. We still have a couple more minutes in this segment, and I was promising people that we would, for those uninitiated in opera, get some gentle guidance, and even hear a little bit of La Boheme in the third segment, which is the third opera this season. And I think I've read that it is the most famous opera, so it is a good one for beginners.
It's just a perfect one for beginners. But I want to say mm-hmm. that I think one of the battles that we fight in America all the time is this fear of opera. And just don't be afraid of it.
I have fear of opera.
I know, just don't be afraid. Try it. You might actually love it.
I have friends. I had an editor that was just really loved opera because he loved the emotions in it. He just loved that it could just be over the top, mm-hmm. that he loved that. And, I wonder, how do you prepare your ear to hear opera? Is there, you've had, Reed and Judy and Jack, your careers, and you've been listening your entire lives, but for someone that's new, it's a very different sound.
I don't really think you need to do your homework at all, except come with an open mind and let it wash over you.
But we do offer a pre-performance lecture for all of our operas, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. if you come an hour before the curtain time, you'll be able to go to a lecture and understand a little bit about that specific opera and, mm-hmm. and maybe opera in general. So mm-hmm. That's an opportunity to learn about coming piece. And we also have about a week and a half or 2 weeks before we open an event we call Take One, where we have an up-and-close encounter with the cast and with the creative team, where people can learn as well and talk to people that are in opera. So it's very...
This coming Sunday, February 3rd.
Okay, well, that's great. And then you have something before your performances, and I do think you have something after to deal with the material that the audience has just witnessed.
Right, this is a model we started last year. Well, we actually started it with Glory Denied, which was two seasons ago. But what we're going to do is we're going to have exhibits in the Voth Hall, which is adjacent to the theater.
Alvira Voth,
From organizations such as the Japanese American Citizens League all the way to Welcoming Anchorage from the Mayor's Office, ACLU, people that are fighting against discrimination mm-hmm. and
promoting unity.
For mm-hmm. equality. Just as the opera begins, we will start with speaking from two members of our community that have experienced internment in some way or another. One was actually interned, incarcerated, Japanese American fellow, and the other is an Aleut, woman of Aleut heritage, whose mother was a babe in arms when she was interned mm-hmm. In Southeast Alaska. And so they're going to relate some thoughts on mm-hmm. the whole internment issues. And then the opera will begin. And afterwards, then we will invite anybody who wishes to come to the Voth Hall again, and they will had the opportunity to listen to a panel discussion that we call a talk back, where the audience can ask questions and interact with the cast.
Okay.
And creative team.
And no question is a bad question.
No,
right?
Absolutely
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
I'm going to welcome a caller on to Hometown Alaska. Cool. Hi, Kyle.
Hi. Sorry to interrupt. I'll be real fast.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm a fledgling music director here in town. And I was listening to the conversation earlier when we were talking about opera and musical theater. And I've had lots of conversations in my life where I've been asked to compare those things for one reason or another. And I always struggled to answer them, kind of like I think the guests did, because I never knew how to say, you know, one is good and one is not good, because that's not really how it works. One day, an analogy came to me that helped me talk about it, and I found it really useful in having this conversation going forward, which was that, you know, if you go to an art museum, you won't hear professional artists saying that Van Gogh was good, but Picasso was bad. Mm. You know, you don't hear people compare art, physical art, and say that one's good and one's bad. They just say, they're both art and they are different, and maybe one speaks to me and one less so. But we would never compare them and say, well, this isn't good and
right.
This is.
Mm.
That's kind of how I feel about opera and musical theater.
Mm.
Yeah, you know, I always say, when people say, I don't like opera, and I say, well, you know, which opera don't you like? It's like saying, I don't like movies. I mean, I don't like horror movies, personally.
I cover my eyes
all
the time.
You know, but it's not going to, and I don't then say, I don't like movies. I like to go to a, you know, uh-huh. a good, you know, historical drama or a love
yeah.
story. You know,
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that's, opera is like that, too. You don't have to love all operas
uh-huh.
to
right
love opera.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah, that was great. That was, and I mean, I'm thinking, Judy, of what you said, let it wash over you, be open, I guess, you know, don't have expectations
right.
of loving or hating or not belonging or
not
whatever.
Not belonging, yeah.
Yeah, just listen. So, okay, we're going to take another little break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about your passions for how you got here and your advice for beginning opera viewers like me. So you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and we have opera on the show today. We had a really interesting question. We were just talking about it during the break about this idea of defining things and when do things begin and when do things end. But before we get caught up in that again, I when I came to do this show, not knowing so little, I went down to the Anchorage Opera's office and Reed kindly let me say, you know, maybe you could help people understand why opera or, you know, is it still relevant today? I think that was my big question, you know. And I had just read a piece in The Guardian where it was like the start of the opera season, and so they had gone to the opera folks and let them say, maybe they were the conductors, I don't really know, but, you know, what's your favorite opera? And, you know, what's a gentle way for a new person to you know, what do you recommend for them? And I thought, and that's what I was going to do with the show until I found out we had the New American Dream, which is all about, you know, relevance and contemporary ideas and concerns and feelings that are hard to put words to. So, you know, that kind of went out by the wayside. But I think we did a good job talking about an American Dream. And you know, you can come and see it in Anchorage. So, keep thinking about Judy. Just let it wash over you.
The other thing about opera, which is like musical theater too, is I think it's always better in the space. It's hard to get it from a recording.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
It's theater. Visceral. It's theater. You have to see it.
You have to be there.
Yeah.
See, it's hard for me to have a show that has music without having some of that music, you know, as part of.
Absolutely.
So, I don't know, but I agree with you. It's always better in person. So anyway, I do want to, you know, say, Judy, I know you had a big career. Reed and Judy came to Anchorage Opera from Tri-Cities Opera, long careers there, and you're, I think, still working back in New York.
Yeah.
You had a whole career in Germany.
Yep.
How did it begin for you? Were you this little seven-year-old that just sang all the time?
Well, as a matter of fact...
I just made that up.
Yeah, well, you're clairvoyant. My operatic debut was in fifth grade when I was in the children's chorus of La Boheme.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I guess I was smitten at the time. I know I wanted to grow up to be Musetta, but because she had the prettiest dress.
Mm-hmm.
It was bright red and lots of ruffles. And I did grow up to be Musetta. It was a long time before I sang in another opera after that. Well, actually, the next season, it was Northwestern University's productions of Boheme.
But you were only in the fifth grade?
I was in the fifth grade.
So they plucked you out.
They came to our school and recruited audition kids to be in this show. And it was I knew nothing about it. See, if you're a kid and you just don't
that's
have any
true.
Preconceptions, you know, and that's why we have a touring education program with Anchorage Opera AO to go, because we want to get them before they
start thinking about
the stereotypes. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Uh-huh.
And then when I grew up and sang Musetta, I wanted to grow up and sing Mimi because she's a much more interesting character.
Right.
To me, anyway. I mean, they're both beautiful. It is La Boheme is like the perfect first-time opera. If you've never been to an opera, you'll love Jax. But if you really want to just, you know, come and say, what is a stereotypical opera or whatever, Boheme is it. I mean, it's a classic love story. It's got achingly beautiful music. It's very relatable. You cry. You cry and you laugh.
Every time.
You cry and you laugh, and it's fabulous. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and play that little excerpt. I don't really remember if I have any cue to what it's about.
This is Musetta's aria.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a tune that people will probably know even if they don't know opera. There's a lot of opera tunes that are in advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And Quando Men Vo, this is called. She's at the Latin Quarter on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And she's talking about how beautiful she is. And she's just strutting her stuff. And it's just lots of fun.
So this is an excerpt from La Boheme.
It is.
And it's about 45 seconds long.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's give it a listen. Was lovely. That I felt like I was breathing fresh air. I don't know. It just felt like I wasn't in this little tiny studio anymore.
Yeah.
I was somehow expansive. Yeah.
You know, the human voice. There's no two alike,
and
it speaks to us in a way that words can't.
Yeah. My husband played for me Nessun Dorma,
mm-hmm.
which is another one of those that just sweeps you away. But honestly,
that would have been one of Reed's.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, Reed. How did you get to here? I think I learned that you studied biology, but you were always taking music and singing classes on the
side. That's correct. I didn't really get introduced to opera until I was a sophomore in college. I had transferred into Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin, and they have a conservatory there. I had been taking private voice lessons since probably senior year of high school, and done some musical theater and church choirs and concert choruses and all that kind of thing. But then I got exposed to opera at Lawrence and really got hooked on it. And because of conservatory, I was able to take voice lessons as part of my classwork and ended up probably with as many music courses as I did biology courses.
Now, were your parents like, oh, we're rooting for biology, we're rooting for biology, or were they happy to see you go toward the arts?
My father was definitely in favor of the biology. My mother was in love with my voice.
Oh, that is very sweet.
But after my father retired, he was the director of the State Bureau of Entomology in Wisconsin, and he got into opera really big time, to the point where he would record things off the radio on a cassette and send it to me and
That
kind of stuff.
Wow.
So
he went with it in the end.
He went with it in the end.
That's great. And okay, Jack, now I do have a bio here and we have it on our website, but tell me what happened? Were you three following musicians or what were you doing?
That aria from Boheme, my grandpa, my dad's dad, who was from... he was from Umbria, but they also had a family home that was not that far from where Puccini, not far from Lucca. So he would play that for me. I was probably like five or something. And I was already growing up on sort of like rock and roll and different things. So it was a bit of a head scratcher. I could tell it was beautiful. Planted a seed, and I could see how much my grandpa was moved by it.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell the music
was... Well, maybe more powerful than the music is watching your grandpa reaction.
Mm-hmm. Both. I could hear in the music. I could hear this. Again, it's the harmony. The way the harmony and the melody synced up was just... I could tell even at, eight or however old it was.
I want to slip in. I'm sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
This was in Italian, so people didn't understand what was being
said. And who cares,
said,
right?
Right, who cares because it's so beautiful. But if you do care, Anchorage Opera always has the translations above the stage.
Oh.
So that's another reason to come. Don't think you won't know the story.
Like I'll be lost the whole time.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you have it for An American Dream as well.
Yes.
I think I read that maybe Seattle did.
Yep.
Because again, sometimes when the voice is going
higher,
it can be hard to... I always like to know what the storyline is. That helps me figure out a little bit what's going on, even if I'm missing some of the words.
We always do.
Yeah, and by the way, Jack, I just loved learning that you're working on Shalimar the Clown based on Salman Rushdie's Shalimar the Clown.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was exciting.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if, is it already up?
It premiered in 2016.
Okay.
Opera Theater of St. Louis, and... I think it did really well. So we're looking at other productions. That's a big show.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of 2.5 hours of music and
A
lot of chorus parts. And it's sort of a grand opera, almost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that also had, the story is primarily set in Kashmir. and it's bookended by scenes in L.A., but so it has a lot of Indian music in it.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't read a lot of some. I know of him. He's a major global character. And to put that with opera, that's some of the fun that I'm having.
To opera.
He also had those scenes with Lin-Manuel, right, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, where there's Fatwa musical.
Okay.
Pretty darn funny.
So, we have a couple minutes left. I'm trying to think, what else do I... We talked about La Boheme being a nice, gentle entry. Are there any other operas you might suggest? Because we've got the Lusac Library has all kinds of recordings. People could go get them.
Anchorage Opera always tries to program a varied diet each season. So we'll have one that is a traditional, more, as we're talking about Boheme.
We like to have a comedy, and then we like to have, you know, an out-of-the-box or, mm-hmm. or a socially relevant piece that speaks to our current times.
Mm-hmm.
Reed, you can talk about ones you're thinking about doing. Give people
yeah.
well,
a heads up
I'd
or
rather
a maybe.
Not at this point.
You don't want to promise
about what we did last season.
Yeah, yeah.
The phone might be ringing off the hook for yeah. people yeah. wanting to audition.
Yeah.
Or like
what about this... I mean, I remember having a show once, are the arts thriving or merely surviving in Alaska? And what can you tell us? I know it's a struggle. What do you think? Do you feel, I mean...
Well, I can say that it's amazing the amount of cultural events and organizations there are in Anchorage. Very pleased to find that when I came up here. Of course, the economy in recession has not helped. As far as the opera company is concerned, the biggest problem we've experienced is a lack of attendance. It fell just off sharply with the start of the recession. We're seeing it pick back up this season, and we're hoping that that trend will continue. There is a strong component of the community that really believes that a city like Anchorage needs to have a strong arts community in order to stay strong and attract new people to come here. And so mm-hmm. That's also very gratifying. And, of course, we get grants from the NEA and grants from Opera America mm-hmm. and even some foundations that are not in Alaska. So. Mm-hmm. It's a never-ending...
it's a struggle, but one worth fighting.
Right, yeah. it's probably not new to you. I mean, you've had long careers in arts administration, so even if you were in New York or Jack, in you've been in San Francisco, you've been in Seattle. I think you're producing operas, you're creating operas, but not maybe worrying about how healthy is Seattle Opera or is attendance going up or down, but...
Well, I worry because I need the next commission.
And you need you need that audience
and
to be there.
And I care about the food, of course.
I think it's not a career you go into for money, definitely not. And you used the word earlier on in the interview, passion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to have a passion for this, mm-hmm. For the arts in general, in order to pursue this, because it's just, it can be a struggle, but it's one so worth fighting for.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was thinking
it
about...
It defines our humanity.
Yeah, how can art help us out of the boxes we get ourselves into? And mm-hmm. I guess it's maybe that reach for humanity or the depiction of human suffering in front of us, people wrestling with these very decisions mm-hmm. that we're thinking about ourselves. You
asked earlier if it was relevant. Well, is political intrigue relevant? Torture, murder, rape, mm-hmm. all of those things happen
in opera.
They're just in different languages and in different time frames.
Right.
But they all have lessons to teach about things.
Right. Which kind of makes me think that we do tell the same stories over and over again, but mm-hmm. we update them with the current facts.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. One question I had is, would an American... we are out of time. Okay,
well, to save that for the next interview.
Yes. Okay, that's a good deal. Anyway, I just really want to thank our guests. We had Judy Berry and Reed Smith from the Anchorage Opera and Jack Perla. And next week, I will be back as your host. We're going to be talking about affordable housing and new ideas to get it to happen in Anchorage, because we don't have a lot of affordable housing. I'd like to thank our engineer, Chris Badalek, and thank you for listening today. This is Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.